Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Greg, how do you describe the importance of today, releasing a schedule to a season that still continues to make people crave football and think that it just might come?
Well, it's another step in the journey, and I think I've used that phrase, I don't know, 1,000 times, it seems, this summer. Today is not the conversation that a year or even 6 months ago I thought I'd be having in mid-August with a reconfigured schedule, expanding our season to 10 conference games, or really shrinking it to 10 conference games. But that's where we are, and the ability to take a step at a time, to have our teams begin practice today, to continue to work through medical issues and how we support a healthy environment. Each one of those are important steps. Today's just one of those that's a little bit more public than some of the others.
That was SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey talking about the schedule release yesterday in the SEC. Welcome back in. Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. Joe, the schedule came out yesterday, and I'll admit, when I saw the schedule come out, I allowed myself to really get hopeful and believe that maybe, just maybe, we could get this college football season in the SEC played. I allowed myself to believe it. It's probably going to end up hurting my heart for doing this, but that's what the schedule release did to me yesterday. What was your reaction?
Yeah, like, I wasn't all that excited, you know, to see it, because it's like, okay, well, we'll see if it happens. But I must say, when you actually look at the dates and you look at, like, the whole week schedule in a league.
Oh, it got me fired up.
It's kind of cool. Like, although the first week's kind of weak.
Yeah, the first week's not great.
But some
what,
of those,
what would you say the best game the first week is? Like, South Carolina-Tennessee, maybe?
Kentucky-Auburn? I think South Carolina-Tennessee, I think the game that'll get the most attention will be Mississippi State LSU, because it's Coach O versus Mike Leach.
Right.
I mean, you're going to have all kinds of, you know, going on in that game.
Comparing mascots, yes.
Yeah, swashbuckling out there. But, yeah, I think Tennessee-South Carolina is probably the best football game of that week. Yeah, Kentucky-Auburn's not bad. Obviously, some other weeks are pretty amazing. I mean, hey, you look at the schedule, it's like, gosh, imagine if every year it was just SEC games week after week, you know. Now, that would be bad for a lot of programs that count on the financial assistance of playing Power 5 teams. But I'm just saying, from a fan perspective, every week it's competitive stuff. So, yeah, it's easy to kind of look at it and get excited. And certainly the idea of Tennessee-Florida in December as the last game is very intriguing.
Did you see the projected opening lines for the September 26th SEC games at I think Brett McMurphy came out with yesterday.
Did I think I did, but the only thing I remember was that, like, Vanderbilt, like, 37-point dogs?
37-point right? dogs.
Against Texas A&M.
That's got to be close to a record.
And it's not, I mean, you know, it's not like, I mean, Texas A&M should be
good,
this year.
But they're not, like,
should be good this year.
Alabama.
Right, they're not, like, national title contender good.
Right.
But, although maybe in a, you know, if it's like the SEC standing alone, then I guess you're more of a national title contender.
Yeah, everybody's a national title contender, I guess.
Except Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
37-point. My goodness. I didn't really take note of the other lines, but I saw that and I was like,
yeah, like LSU's 26 points against Mississippi State, and then everything else is what you'd expect. Georgia's 24 against Arkansas. Alabama 19.5 against Missouri.
And Tennessee a pick 'em, right?
Pick 'em against
Tennessee
South Carolina.
A pick 'em against South Carolina. Yeah. So
37.
Yeah, that's the best game for sure.
37 points.
Man.
I saw that, and I was like, oh, my goodness.
Well, and I wonder with that, so is that just a straight-up, like, Vanderbilt? I understand these lines are, you know, they are altered by personnel, but, I mean, is that just, like, Vanderbilt takes an M? Or, like, how much did that, quote-unquote, move or change finding out Vanderbilt has apparently three offensive linemen who are
opting out
for an offensive line that was probably already, you know, going to struggle against some of these SEC defenses. And Demetri Moore, really, really good player on the defensive side of the ball, opting out. You're already, like, down to, if you're Vanderbilt, you've got a few guys who can make a difference for you in a given season, usually.
Yeah.
And you can't afford to lose those. So I wonder, like, maybe it was only going to be 34 before those. I don't know.
We'll never know, really, probably.
Yes.
Speaking of offensive line, big news yesterday out of the University of Tennessee. Cade Mays had his transfer waiver denied. Mays, of course, coming over from Georgia and was supposed to be, I think, a big part of Tennessee's offensive line, who we think could be really, really good this year. That offensive line has the potential to be a very good offensive line. His transfer waiver denied. Tennessee plans on appealing that decision made by the NCAA. Jeremy Pruitt, head coach at Tennessee, had comments yesterday regarding the decision that came down on Cade Mays. Here's what Jeremy Pruitt had to say.
So we do have an update with Cade. We obviously applied for, you know, a waiver for initial eligibility here, and it was denied. We're in the process of appealing that. For me, it is frustrating, and it's frustrating for Cade. You know, just looking at it, you know, for his sake, a guy that, you know, to me, I think he was a really good player at Georgia, and I don't know how he did there, but I know playing against him, I thought he was one of the better players in the league. I thought he played the right way. You know, the circumstances surrounding him and his family, something that he had no control over. You know, and when you look at a young man, you know, once he transfers, you know, going through the process of how is he going to be eligible, you know, there's a lot that goes into that. You know, he's sitting there with this case looming. You know, does that affect where he's at on the depth chart? Does that affect anything that goes on around him? You know, it's an unusual circumstance.
That was Tennessee head coach Jeremy Pruitt, who believes that Cade Mays is a good player. He don't know how he did at Georgia, but he's a good player.
Man, haven't heard Jeremy Pruitt in a while. Hey, I give Jeremy Pruitt some credit for restraint there, because he's got to be furious.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is so stupid.
This is so, like, this is, you know, we were talking about Mark Emmert last week. The things that the NCAA concerns themselves with and the things that they just have no plan for, those two things are in complete opposition of each other in terms of where the importance should be. It's just so stupid. Like, just put give the guy the waiver. I mean, come on. And we've seen all kinds of people. Isaiah Wilson of the Titans has talked about it on Twitter. Jay Billis from ESPN has talked about it on Twitter about how stupid this decision is from the NCAA. Cade Mays, I think he originally committed to Tennessee. He ended up going to Georgia because Butch Jones got fired. Now his brother is playing at Tennessee. He just wanted to come play at Tennessee.
Yeah, and there was
position coach, I think, got fired at Georgia. So there's a whole lot of things that go into this situation, but it's just another situation of the NCAA being worried about things and making decisions on things that don't matter. Like, come on. Just give the guy the waiver.
Yeah, Mark Emmert's out there. You know, he's still pushing hard to stop name, image, likeness rights, but, you know, it has nothing to say about, you know, the important stuff in the world right now. He doesn't have a lot of power in that, but still, just the way he's presenting himself in these things is not impressive. And, like, how do you deny this waiver? Tom Mars, an attorney who worked on this case, our David Ubb at The Athletic, this is his quote. I'm starting to think, at this point, I don't think there's anything the NCAA could do about a waiver request that would shock me. This is Tom Mars. I'm starting to think they must use a dartboard to make these decisions. That's pretty well said. I mean, it's already been bizarre what gets approved and what doesn't. It's completely, from what I can tell, random.
There's no formula whatsoever.
Like someone, like what Billis tweeted, yeah, I guess if he was a quarterback, he'd be fine,
yeah.
Right? I mean, they just usually get shuttered right in. It's just so, like, right now, with everything else, just his case, I thought he was going to get in anyway. There was also a thing with his dad and
yeah.
like his injury, all this stuff. But then you add in this pandemic and what's going on right now in the world. I mean, I think it's obvious. I've always kind of penciled him in at right guard for Tennessee. So hopefully the waiver happens and gets approved. You know, with basketball for Tennessee, Juroš Plavšić finally got approved, but it was like halfway through the season. Yeah. And
like, thanks.
So, again, this may not matter this year. You know, there may not be a season anyway, but just another reason to shake your head when you look at the NCAA and say, look, guys, just streamline this. I mean, again, if you have the one time, then it ends all this crap. It's one time, you're fine, and then after that, you're not getting a waiver. But for now, to me, I think you approve all of them, don't you? Just approve them. Stupid.
And in terms of the on-field impact for Tennessee, I don't think it's the end of the world if Cade Mays can't play, because I still think their offensive line is going to be in better shape than that offensive line has been in a long time. And Trey Smith coming back has a large part to do with that. He's an outstanding player. But just approve the waiver. It's just so dumb. I am so tired of having these conversations about the NCAA. When we've been spending 6 months talking about a pandemic and what the NCAA's response is going to be, what the plan is going to be, and then you come to find out basically there is no plan and everybody's just kind of operating on their own and figuring things out as they go along. But by God, we still got time to hand out punishments and to make sure waivers don't get approved. It's just it makes them look so bad.
Yeah.
So bad.
And I understand, you know, you've got fan bases all over the country. Some get approved, some don't. People get angry. But again, there's the randomness and the lack of transparency and explanation is just frustrating. I mean, Tennessee, if you want to just look at Tennessee, they got Aubrey Solomon last year approved. Why him and
what's the Cade difference?
Mays, I don't know. I mean, I know sometimes there are details in these cases that you didn't know when you find out someone did get approved. Sometimes it's like, oh, yeah, I mean, sometimes there's like a death in the family or something like that that you didn't know about. What we know of Cade Mays, to me, and the same thing with Plavšić before, it's like, yeah, this looks like a slam dunk, and then it doesn't get approved. I have no idea.
When we come back, we will dive back into some Titans talk. Daquan Jones, Titans defensive tackle, will join us. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode, taking you through this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, talking some Titans, and we are very pleased to be joined by Titans defensive tackle Daquan Jones. Daquan, what's going on, my man?
How's it going, guys? Good morning.
Going well. So what's this training camp been like for you so far, Daquan? How normal or not normal has it felt while you've been out there with the guys so far?
At first, it felt a little weird. I mean, you have to get used to the new normal, but yesterday was the first day at pads, and I'm telling you now, that felt like camp. So I think, you know, with pads on and everything getting back to normal, it feels fine to me.
Daquan, how are things different for you this year with Jarrell Casey moving on? How do you view, I guess, that impact on you both on the field and then even in terms of your voice in the room this season?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be different. I've played with him for the last five seasons, so, yeah, it's going to be real different. But, you know, for me, just taking on a more of a leadership role and actually going in there and speaking up and voicing my opinion on things and helping the rookies learn as much as they can.
Daquan, obviously, Dean Pease was a very popular guy in that locker room. What were some of the biggest takeaways that you had while he was coaching you, and what do you think it's going to be like without him this year?
Well, from Dean, I mean, you learn a lot. You learn more about football. I felt like I got to learn more about not just my position but other positions. So that, you know, that I took that and made sure I learned as much as I could. But I mean, I think going forward, it really feels like he's still here. I mean, everyone's still talking like it was. You know, everyone's coaching everybody. So I really don't think it'd be a big difference for me personally, and I feel like a lot of guys feel the same way. I mean, everyone's just—it's a defense where everyone's talking, everyone's coaching, you're learning, and you learn something new every day.
And of course, Shane Bowen kind of stepping into, at least in some ways, some of the defensive coordinator duties. What have you seen so far from Shane on that? I mean, obviously he's still coaching the outside linebackers, but are you seeing him, I guess, be more vocal or you know, I guess take on some of those responsibilities so far?
I mean, but, you know, like I said, too, like, he also talked a lot last year. So, I mean, for him to go up there and talk is kind of normal. So, I mean, he's doing a heck of a job of it, and I think everyone in the room respects him enough to sit there and give him the undivided attention. So, I think he's doing a good job.
Titans defensive tackle Daquan Jones on the line with us. Okay, Daquan, us normal non-athletic guys that me and Joe are here on this radio station, sometimes we look at Derrick Henry and we say, how in the world do people tackle that guy? What is it like to try to tackle Derrick Henry? Because I'll be honest with you, I look at some of the teams that you guys are playing sometimes, and you can tell that some players are just absolutely terrified to go try and hit that guy. What's it like to tackle Derrick Henry?
You know, we only get to start him up in practice, but even when you do that, I mean, you feel the power behind him. And you go on and turn some of the games, not a lot to go on and tackle him for all 60 minutes of a game. You know what I mean? He's a big physical runner, so, I mean, that's going to wear on anybody over 60 minutes. So, I mean, he just goes out there and plays his game, and we all see it. I mean, the defense wears down at the end.
Well, speaking of freaks, you've got a guy next to you and Jeffrey Simmons, who obviously I was really impressed, I think everyone was, how quickly he got back last year, Daquan, you know, from the ACL, makes a difference for you guys, and now obviously a bigger role for him. What have you seen from him? You know, what do you think, you know, his potential, his ceiling is this year in his second year now that he's fully healthy?
I mean, that's right there. I mean, I'm just happy that he's fully healthy and he can go out there and showcase his skills. I mean, what is he going to do? I guess we're all going to have to find out week one. But I'm just happy for him that he's healthy. I mean, he's excited to come to work every day and go on the practice field and get better. So I'm with it with you guys. I'm just excited to see him go out there and fully put his skills on display.
So, Daquan, you've been progressing every year, becoming better and better. What do you think the next step is for you this year in this defense?
Just keep working, man. Just keep putting my head down and help the team any way I can. So, I mean, for this year, just go out there being a dominant force in the run game and doing my job and to make sure I'm holding double teams and I'm helping free up the linebacker and stuff like that. So, I'm just keep going out there and doing my job like I've been doing and hopefully help the team win.
Who are you noticing so far, Daquan? Also on that defensive line, obviously some new guys coming in. Larrell Murchison, rookie, gets drafted. Haven't seen Jack Crawford out there a lot so far, but anyone right now kind of turning your head so far?
I feel like it's still kind of early for that. I mean, we had our first Saturday yesterday. You know, everyone, the energy was up and everyone was excited, but I feel like after, you know, a good week of practice, I'll have a better answer for you guys. But I feel like after the first day, it was kind of, everyone was kind of going. We'll see who can be consistent going forward.
Titans defensive tackle Daquan Jones on the line with us here on Morning Drive. And Daquan, you speaking of rookies, like, it's got to be a difficult situation this year for rookies coming in with everything going on with COVID and the different protocols in place. Like, how do you guys as veterans help these rookies along and get up to speed quicker without preseason games and without the benefit of OTAs as well?
Yeah, I feel like it just comes down to talking to them and telling them to take advantage of every practice rep. I mean, they got to treat it like a game rep. You know, when the pads come on, you got to go out there and treat it like a game rep and do your very best. And at the same time, learn the playbook, learn what the coaches are telling you and try to put it to use in every way you can. Taking everything from individual to team periods, I feel like that would help and show the coaches that you can be coachable and be dependable.
Is that difficult, Daquan? And even not even just for the young guys who obviously would get a lot of looks in these preseason games, you know, special teams, I think of in particular. You guys don't usually do a lot of live special teams. These preseason games are big for that. Now you got to switch that. Is it difficult? And I know it's still early in camp, but to not have sort of the game build up, you know, be out there on the field, and even though it's a preseason game, have an opponent to go at, you know, four times before you guys get into the season.
I feel like it's going to be a huge adjustment, trying to get used to that and not having that. Even though it's somebody else, everybody gets excited hitting somebody else, you know what I mean? So, I mean, because for the next couple of weeks, we're going to know, you know, our teammates and who we're going against. We're going to have a profile built for them. So just having, you know, a change of opponent bring the like a different element to it. So not having that, I feel like it's gonna be a little weird, but you know, just it's another adjustment to go through with COVID.
Daquan, you guys were in the top half of the league last year in your rush defense. What do you think's the key to building on that and even moving up on that this year?
Just continue to execute our defense the way it needs to be executed. I mean, really. I mean, we do that. I think we'll be fine. I think those numbers will hopefully go up. But I think if we just go in there and execute our defense, we'll be fine.
Daquan, I think every one of you guys on defense who has done the Zoom calls with us has been asked this question, but I'm going to ask you again on Vic Beasley, a guy who obviously, you know, at first didn't show up and then came in the day after the opt-outs, right now is not on the field yet, but what is your take on that, and what have you seen so far from him just in meetings and things like that? And what do you think that he can provide for this defense once he gets out on the field?
Yeah, I think once he gets out there, he'll be fine. I feel like, you know, his football instincts will take over. But right now, I mean, he's working while we're working. He's learning the playbook. He's attentive in meetings. So I think he'll be fine. Like I said before, like if you need extra help, like I feel like anyone on the team would be willing to help him out. So I think he'll be fine. I think he'll come in and Joe, you know, right with us.
Titans defensive tackle Daquan Jones on the line with us. All right, so we see Vrabel out there sometimes, Daquan, and he's very hands-on, as you know, a coach that is not afraid to get up in there and get involved with the drills. Do you ever kind of look at Vrabel and say, hey, man, like, you're going to get hurt out there? Like, I know he's big. He looks like he can still play. Sometimes I get nervous, Daquan, that he's going to get a little too physical out there.
No, I think he'd be fine. He's a big boy. I mean, what, he stopped playing, what, a couple years ago?
Yeah.
I mean, he'd be all right. He's still a young coach. So, I mean, it's good to see when you have a head coach like that goes out there and gets down in the drill and actually shows you what he wants and stuff like that. I mean, it's awesome to see that. It truly is.
So, Daquan, what's the expectation internally for this team? I think they're high, you know, on the outside, fans and media. I feel like, obviously, you guys coming off an AFC championship game appearance, you know, the idea that you guys could win this division is right there for you. What internally, what's the discussion in terms of what you guys could do this season?
I just feel like everyone's on the same page as far as, like, we have work to do, and last year was last year. It's a whole new team. We have to come in and work every day and build on our fundamentals. And, you know, hopefully that'll take care of itself going into the season and make sure that we are the healthiest team going out and staying healthy. That's going to be the main point this whole season. It's the healthiest team is going to make it the furthest. So as long as we sit there and hold each other accountable and do the right things, I feel like this team can do a lot of good things.
Titans defensive tackle Daquan Jones has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Daquan, thanks so much for taking time to join us this morning, and good luck this season. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Absolutely. Thanks, Daquan Jones, Titans defensive tackle. A really important guy on that defense, especially now, like you mentioned, Joe, with Jarrell Casey out the door. I think there's going to be a lot more responsibility on Daquan Jones this year, and he's a guy, if you look at the numbers, I mean, he's continuing to get better on a year-by-year basis. So I'm excited to see what he can do this year.
No, he's a really good player. He's been a force for them. And I would have to say, I don't know if he's the most underrated guy, but he's probably the least talked about key player or right up there in the last few years. You know, he's been really solid. And you know, you take Jarrell Casey out of there, and it really falls on him as far as the veteran leadership of that group, even though Jeffrey Simmons is obviously the guy everybody's going to be watching to break out this season.
Vrabel gets in there, man.
He does.
I do get nervous. And he's a big guy. I understand. But
yeah, I mean,
throws that weight around sometimes.
I think he misses playing. I'm sure there was like player coaches in the 1940s and stuff. I still think that Vrabel should like go do like one rep with the punt team to be a player coach. You know, why not?
Get in that goal line package.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
Yeah,
get in there.
H-back. You can do an H-back
come
rep.
Over the top. I mean, what's he got, 10 touchdowns in his career?
Oh, I mean, he never dropped the ball, man.
No.
He had big catches all through his career. But, yeah, he could lay a crunching lead block still as an H-back right now. Why not?
When we come back, we'll dive back into the Titans, dissect what this defensive line could look like without Clowney and without Jarrell Casey. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Daquan, I think every one of you guys on defense who has done the Zoom calls with us has been asked this question, but I'm going to ask you again on Vic Beasley, a guy who obviously, you know, at first didn't show up and then came in the day after the opt-outs, right now is not on the field yet, but what is your take on that, and what have you seen so far from him just in meetings and things like that? And what do you think that he can provide for this defense once he gets out on the field?
Yeah, I think once he gets out there, he'll be fine. I feel like, you know, his football instincts take over. But right now, I mean, he's working while we're working. He's learning the playbook. He's attentive in meetings. So I think he'll be fine. Like I said before, like if you need extra help, like I feel like anyone on the team would be willing to help him out. So I think he'll be fine. I think he'll come in and Joe, you know, play with us.
That was Titans defensive tackle Daquan Jones joining. I'm still getting that thing screwed up. Jones adjoining.
Daquan joins.
Thanks to Daquan Jones for joining us in the last segment. Talking about Vic Beasley there.
Another stumbling question for me.
Stumbling, bumbling. I thought that was pretty smooth. Yeah. From you, not me. I just screwed that up royally. That's okay.
It's early still, man. It's not even 8 a.m. That's one of those. And those guys have all been asked about Vic Beasley. And no one's going to say, man, get that guy out of here. And I think in for the most part, you know, players are supporting players as they should when it comes to like holdouts or whatever the case may be. You know, the difference with Beasley is like, it's just this sort of uncertainty about, is this guy showing up? Does he want to play? Is he going to provide help? And that's, again, they're all going to support him publicly, and everyone's going to hope that he works out, passes the physical, gets on the field. But right now, if you're looking at the Vic Beasley signing and looking at this team today, there's still a disconnect and some real concern that this is going to end up working out for the Titans.
Well, we know how John Robinson and Mike Vrabel probably feel about the situation with Vic Beasley. How do we think the players in the locker room feel about it? Because, like you said, like players typically do a good job of, and this is not an NFL thing, this is an all-sport thing, of really supporting each other and, you know, not really getting involved in contract negotiations or holdouts or failed physicals or whatever else is going on. But it's got to be somewhat of an issue, or at least a talking point in that Titans locker room, doesn't it?
Well, at least a concern. Like, I don't know if anybody would be mad at him, but, like, you know, if you're a guy on this team, you got to wonder what's happening if someone doesn't show up and then, again, doesn't call, to the point where the team puts out the information that he didn't call.
Yeah.
and then puts out a statement that finally they made contact. I mean, that whole thing is just a weird deal. So if you're a guy on this team, you're hoping that he comes in and helps you be better rushing the passer, helps your defense. Now, maybe there's some guys who move up the depth chart if he doesn't. So those guys might look at it differently. But, yeah, like – every once in a while, you'll have, like, you think about the Steelers a couple of years ago. They started to get ticked off at Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
Which, I was disappointed in those guys. It's like, look, you know, come on. I mean, you should support anyone trying to get more money in this league, trying to do what they can do, because it's obviously a tough league and you're out on the street like that.
Especially at that position.
Yeah. But at the same time, if you're a team, right, that team was hoping to contend and needed him, and if guys are going to work their butts off hoping for something with a team goal and then a key guy is not going to be there, I get that too. So with this situation, I'm sure there's at least some curiosity and probably some frustration about what is happening with this guy. Now he hasn't passed a physical. You know, is he going to end up helping? I mean, it's John Robinson. He's the guy who gave him $9.5 million. You know, so like you said, we saw Vrabel basically pleading publicly for like, hey man, I'd love to coach you. Yeah, come on out. You know, and then I think what 2 days later he did. He came out the day after opt outs. But the Beasley thing, now at some point presumably he's going to pass a physical and be out there. And then at some point he's going to talk, I guess. I mean, the Titans, I would think as soon as he's active, he's going to talk, and it'll be interesting. But again, I've heard things from people in Atlanta about even surprise that he didn't retire last year, or after last year.
Yeah.
Sort of just this feeling that, yeah, maybe he's just doesn't love football, which is totally fine, understandable. And more you're seeing people just get out before health becomes a real concern. I'm doing a thing on Ohio State and the Titans and talked to Joshua Perry for this story that's running this week. But he retired 2 years ago, what, 2-3 years in the league? He had a few concussions. He's like, yeah, I'm just getting out. We've seen that more and more.
And think about Andrew Luck.
Chris Borland. Sure, Andrew Luck's another one. So, I mean, you can't knock anyone for thinking that way. But, like, if you're the Titans and it's sort of like someone who doesn't want to play, you know, I'm speculating, but someone who doesn't want to play or isn't sure he wants to play, but he's going to squeeze a little more money out of it from you, if you're the team that's getting money squeezed out of you for that, that's a very uncomfortable place to be. So it's going to be a microscope on him when he's finally activated and out on that field.
So we mentioned DaQuan Jones and kind of the role that he's going to be expected to play this year with the Titans. Joe, as we look at this defensive line with Jarrell Casey gone, Vic Beasley, his situation's up in the air right now. We don't know what we're going to see out of Vic Beasley when and if he's on the field. How do we assess where this D-line, and more specifically the pass rush, is right now? Because I still feel okay about their ability to stop the run when you factor in, you know, Rashawn Evans, Jeffrey Simmons, DaQuan Jones. I feel okay about their ability to stop the run. The issue I have and the concern I have with this group is, can you get to the quarterback quickly enough to force them to either cut off their routes or to make throws uncomfortable? You know, getting sacks is one thing. We all want to see that, obviously, but it's not just about getting sacks in the NFL. It's making the quarterback uncomfortable. Are we confident enough in this defensive line that they can do that on a more consistent basis than they did last year? Because that was kind of the big hang-up last year. I mean, Harold Landry went through a stretch where he was playing really well, and then he would disappear for three games, and there was really no in-between with anybody else. How do we feel about that group heading into this season?
Well, this is another reason why I think Clowney would be such a nice addition, because in Vrabel's defense in Houston, he did put him up on that D-line a fair amount. Obviously, he's an edge player, but you can move him around there. He can be a 3-4 defensive end, too,
yep,
at that size. So it's sort of like he would address two things, because the defensive line depth also is a concern. I mean, when you talk about pass rush, I start with Jeffrey Simmons. Can Jeffrey Simmons be a guy, not saying he's going to be a big sack number guy, but just a guy who takes on double teams and disrupts and gets pressure up the middle, and everyone else gets better when you have that. And again, DaQuan Jones is a good, solid player. Right now, they don't have Jack Crawford out there. I mean, he was their, you know, defensive line signing. I mean, their depth up there right now is kind of uncertain.
Yep.
They drafted Laurel Murchison. They need him to work out. They've got Isaiah Mack, who was one of the pleasant stories of camp last year. They got all-name guy Tierre Tart, Florida International undrafted rookie. I mean, it's a fantastic name, Tierre Tart. You've got Joey Ivey. And then, you know, Matt Dickerson's another guy that you keep in mind. You know, they need a nice, solid group there, and they need Simmons to be fantastic. I mean, Jarrell Casey last year was
good.
Pretty good. I thought he was really good in the playoffs at times. He looked more like Jarrell Casey of years past. It's still a loss to not have him. I mean, I understand the move. It's still a loss not to have him. And then, to your point, then off the edge, what do you have? Right now they're looking at DeAndre Walker. You know, Kamale Correa's not out there yet. Again, these injuries right now, we don't have details on some of the guys who are hurt. I mean, Correa just talked to us last week. I don't think it's anything serious, but
unfit to play?
Yeah, they don't do the unfit to play.
No unfit to play?
Huh. UTP?
Funny how that works.
Yeah. You know, but No lower body or upper body designation either. But, yeah, on the edge, Harold Landry's got to be good. But Harold Landry's just got to have help. Harold Landry can be better and improve as a player. But to me, you've got to have somebody over there making a difference and helping him out. Vic Beasley was the guy tabbed for that. And I don't know. At this point, I see one answer.
Yeah. I will say this, though. All indications are early on, Jeffrey Simmons looks really good in camp. And I heard, I think TD was on with Jared and the GM yesterday, and he was like, let me tell you, Jeffrey Simmons looks like he's ready to go. And that's got to be a very good sign for the Titans because they're going to need him. They're going to need him to be at an elite level this year. And we've seen glimpses of it last year that he certainly can do that. Now, the question is, how often can you do that? How consistently can you do that this year with the Titans?
Right, and you're going to get a lot of snaps. I mean, last year they were able to kind of weave him in sparingly more in some games. He played quite a bit in some games, but he's going to be a heavy snap count guy now. So there's also the conditioning aspect of it. But now he looks awesome. I mean, he's a big-time talent, and there is so much value in having a guy like that in the middle of your defensive line who can just move people and disrupt. So if he can stay healthy, I think he's due for a big year. He still needs more help around him, though.
When we come back, the NBA playoffs began yesterday, and the NHL playoffs continue to roll on. We'll give our thoughts on those series, as well as what's going on with the Colorado Avalanche and the Arizona Coyotes, the Predators' opponent as well. That's next. But first, make sure you visit rocknashville.com. It's your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's rocknashville.com. We'll be right back on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home, and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Welcome back in. Morning Drive, Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, who is playing the air guitar over there as we speak.
That was Air Base.
Air Base. Okay, Air Base. Excuse me. Sorry.
Foo Fighters.
Let me get my instruments right. Yeah, you switched it up a little bit today on your song of the day.
I was listening
to that. No old school hip hop.
Yeah, it's usually old school
hip
hop.
No break dancing.
Yeah, I mean, that's always there. We'll always have that. I've got a lot more of those.
It should not always be there. How about that?
I've got some Houdini for you next. But yeah, I was like jamming to some I was jamming to some Foo Fighters on the way in. That's the best Foo Fighters song, Stacked Actors.
That's kind of a hot take.
Jam. I know it is. It is a hot take. But if you look at their live performances, I've never seen them live. Really
I
want
either.
To, but that's often like their encore song.
Okay.
As it should be.
There you go. The NBA playoffs began yesterday, Joe. Stanley Cup playoffs still well underway. And by the way, I said last week, the Arizona team, not very good that the Predators lost to. They are getting destroyed.
Touchdown.
By the Colorado Avalanche. And yes, you can look at yesterday's game and think that, yeah, it's easy to say that after they get beat 7-1. Colorado with a 7-1 win against the Coyotes yesterday. They've been getting killed the entire series. Even the game that they won. Colorado up 3-1 in that series. The game Arizona won, I think they got outshot like 50-19. Like they have just been getting destroyed by Colorado. So that cannot make you feel great if you're David Poile and the Nashville Predators to watch the Avalanche just totally dismantle the Coyotes and convert on their chances when they get them.
No, not at all. It's a lot harder sell of played really well against those guys, and you know they're completely overmatched. You made the point earlier that the Preds would have had the Blues; it would not have been the Avs. Avs look pretty awesome
they
too,
pretty
by
good.
The way. So that's the flip side of the Coyotes not deserving to be there. I mean, they deserve to be there; they beat the Preds, but it's not great for hockey fans to have to keep watching them.
No, like they struggle to get to 20 shots every game. It's not good. They got 15 yesterday.
And poor Darcy Kemper's out there just target practice.
He's got to be really tired at this point. I think he got pulled after the sixth goal yesterday, so gave him a little break. It's all good.
Hey, thanks a lot, Tampa, Rick.
Yeah, appreciate you. Tampa Bay up 3-1 against Columbus. Boston comes back. I think Carolina was up 2-0 heading into the third period. Boston scores four straight. Wins 4-3 against the Hurricanes to go up 3-1 in that series. That might be all she wrote for Carolina with Svechnikov out. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, and Tuca, everybody freaking out about him leaving, and this sort of quiets that down, at least temporarily.
Blues come back last night, 3-1, tie up the series with Vancouver at 2. Flyers Canadiens will be tonight, or actually today at 2 o'clock. Stars and Flames, 2-2 series, so a good series there in the Western Conference. And the Vegas Golden Knights with an opportunity to eliminate Chicago tonight, which, Joe, I believe they will.
And you're just going to ignore Barry Trotz?
Yeah, Barry Trotz is
skating circles around the
kicking
Capitals.
The butt of the Washington Capitals. Up 3-0, they can eliminate Washington today. But I watched the Chicago-Vegas game the other night. It took like a literal miracle from Corey Crawford for them to win that game.
Yeah.
So they're going to be done today. That's my prediction.
Yeah.
Bold prediction.
Some kind of chalky, results in some of these series, especially with that one in the Avs Coyotes. I think this Vancouver St. Louis series and the Calgary Dallas series, those series look like they could really go the distance maybe.
Yep.
And we'll see with the Canadians. It's been a nice story. I mean, it has. And we'll see if they can keep battling and hang in there. They've been a real nice storyline, and they scrap and claw, even though they should be overmatched.
NBA playoffs began yesterday, and the first game of the day, I believe, was the Jazz and the Nuggets. The Nuggets with a big overtime win. Donovan Mitchell of the Jazz drops 57 points, and they lose. That's got to be – I mean, I think Mike Conley's out of the bubble right now, so it's basically Donovan Mitchell having to score all the points, which he did so yesterday, but it's got to be tough to lose after you score 57 points.
And I want to say, what, only two people have had more in a playoff game? Did I see that correctly?
I think it's the most since Jordan, isn't it?
Yeah, Jordan. Yeah.
Most since Jordan against the Celtics, 63 and 86.
And guess what? He lost that game too.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what's crazy is he also had like 9 rebounds and 7 assists. So it's not like he was just out there scoring.
It.
He was just out there doing pretty much everything. But what stopped them was Jamal Murray was doing the exact same thing. And if you watch that fourth quarter was amazing. It was Donovan Mitchell goes down the court, shoots a 3, and then here comes either Jokic or Jamal Murray shooting a 3 to bring them back. And Jokic missed the game winner. It could have been an easy game winner for him, but he misfired on it. And then overtime, they kind of just took it over. So Jamal Murray had like 36 last night. I think Jokic had 29.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, this is going to be a competitive series if that's the games we're going to get. And it's funny because Jamal Murray, and this is like shows you how funny the bubble is, Jamal Murray runs into Donovan Mitchell, like he's Snapchat. He's
sitting
like,
in like a cafe.
Like just sitting at a cafe by himself after the game. He was like, look what I just ran into. Like this dude just scores 57 on us and I run into him in the bubble. Sitting at a cafe and he's like smiling and relaxing. But that's going to be a very competitive series. But it's a competitive matchup between Jokic and Gobert. Gobert is one of the best defensive centers. Jokic is probably one of the best offensive centers. And then seeing what Donovan Mitchell was able to do last night, that was pretty good. So Nuggets up 1-0 now.
He's unbelievable.
He is.
Raptors absolutely destroy the Brooklyn Nets. No surprise there. Celtics with a 109-101 win against the 76ers. And the Clippers with a 118-110 win against the Dallas Mavericks in a game where Kristaps Porzingis gets thrown out in the third quarter for his second technical. And the first one, okay, whatever. I don't really have a problem with. Second one, you're over there basically just defending your teammate, Luka Doncic, which is by far the best players for the Mavericks, one of the best players in the league. I said it the other day about the Grizzlies game. These NBA officials are so soft.
They're way too
sensitive. Like, you get paid so much money to officiate a basketball game. The story is not you. Shut up and let the players play. Unless they're out there calling and, like, threatening your family. Don't be calling technicals on people in the bubble in the playoffs. Nobody wants to see Porzingis get thrown out of that game. It's infuriating to me how soft NBA officiating is.
Yeah, and that's just – I mean, you're hurting the product. I mean, look, sometimes you have to do it. You didn't have to do it there. It's got to be like they hear way more stuff now, right? That's the only thing I can come up with is that now they actually hear everything those guys are saying, and maybe they would be this sensitive anyway, but – having fans in the stands
just drowns it out.
I don't know.
I mean, the referees, it's not about you, man. Like, and that frustrated me watching that. It's not about you. I hate that they have the cameras now in front of the referees as they make calls, because now they're all in the spotlight. Like, no, the game is not about you. It's about Porzingis and Morris and Luka and the players on the court. And it was just unfair for Porzingis, because I think that really killed the Mavs' momentum too. And the Mavs could have won that game. Mavs were leading in that game pretty comfortably. And, you know, it's just, it sucks that that has to be the reason that, you know, they fall off, is because they're missing their second best player on their team, all because he was just trying to defend a teammate. You know, Morris was in the wrong. Like, he locked up with Luka. Luka, you know, as anybody would, if you're trying to lock up with me, I'm going to eventually move my arm away, like, get away from me.
Yeah.
Then Morris got in Luka's face, and then Porzingis come out of nowhere and pushes Morris because he's trying to defend his teammate. And that's, you know, kudos to Porzingis for doing that, because, you know, quite frankly, there's some that will just kind of sit back and just let it happen. So, you know, that's your star player. You got to stick up for him. And, you know, Dirk had a strong response on it, and LeBron. And when Dirk and LeBron speaks about it, yeah, it's pretty bad.
NBA playoffs continue tonight. Magic and Bucks, that'll be a sweep. No need to watch. That one will be a sweep. Heat and Pacers at 3 o'clock today.
You're going to be
the best series of the playoffs right there. Love it. So Thunder and Rockets, which I also think is going to be a really good series.
Yeah.
And then tonight, Munson's Lakers take on Damian Lillard and the Portland Trail
Blazers. People are over-exaggerating the series a little bit.
But I still really want to watch it, and it stinks that it's the
Trail Blazers and Lakers.
What are you going to do if they win game one tonight?
I mean, I wouldn't care. I think the Lakers are still going to win. I think the Lakers are still going to win in five or six, but – look, who's going to guard?
I mean, six is a good series.
Yeah. Who is going to – it may be a competitive five-game series, but who is going to defend LeBron James and Anthony Davis on that team?
Nobody.
Because they have nobody who can defend them.
No.
Like, not Zach Collins, not –
who's
going to
guard Damian? Nobody.
LeBron?
No.
LeBron will guard.
He may attempt.
Yeah, LeBron will guard Damian Lillard in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
because he did that with Steph Curry in the finals before, where LeBron would defend Steph Curry because
LeBron's an old man now, though.
Yeah,
can't move the same way.
But look, especially
still
when they
moves
get
pretty good
when they get Rondo back, especially. But you know, it's
when's that happening?
Never. Hopefully, I'm just kidding. Wow. I like Rondo. He's cool.
It's but not going to be until like conference finals.
He helps
right?
them though.
He helps them defensively for sure. Yeah. And look. It's going to be a matter of who plays better defense in this game, and it's probably going to be the Lakers, because the Lakers front court is a lot better than what the Blazers have. And so I think it's going to be Lakers in five or six.
Okay.
I just want to watch the games. I think they're going to be fun games to watch, and I think they're all going to be night games, which stinks.
It's 8 o'clock, though.
Yeah, it's 8
you
o'clock.
You can do it. Hey, you can make 8 o'clock.
I went to sleep at 11.
I can do part of it.
Well, I went to bed at 11 because that's when the game, the Clippers and Mavs ended. So, yeah.
I'm also old. Let's not forget that.
No, but if I would not be surprised if the Blazers win this game. And I wouldn't be surprised if they win the series. I would not be shocked either way.
What? How do we go from 5 and 6 and you won't be surprised if they win the series?
I wouldn't be
surprised. You will too be surprised.
No, I would not be surprised if the Lakers win in 5 because they overmatched them on offense. And I would not be surprised if the Blazers win in 7 because the Lakers are low in depth. So
you would be surprised. We'd all be surprised.
Nah, not really.
Yes.
Not really. I wouldn't have been surprised if the Mavs would win.
Well,
that game last night, but not the series. But yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if the Mavs take them to 7 because the Mavs are really good. They got Luka on their team. They got the best point guard in the league.
42-9-7 for
yep,
Luka
pretty
last
good.
Night.
When we come back, we'll dive back into some college football talk. Andy Staples from The Athletic will join us. That's next. This is Morning Drive. Live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.